Amit. So I traveled outside of San Francisco for the first time this year.
Yeah, where'd you go?
I went to Paris.
Paris, France?
No, it was Paris, Illinois. I left out the state on purpose.
Oh, there. Man, I got excited when I heard Paris.
Yeah, I went to visit our headquarters out in Paris, Illinois.
Oh, okay. So how was that travel experience during COVID?
The most surprising part of the whole trip was, did you know this? If you have to wear masks on the plane, if you refuse to wear your mask, you could be fined $10,000.
$10,000?
$10,000 is the fine for not wearing your mask. Yeah, they announced that over the intercom and
everyone's like, oh my God. Okay.
Yeah. But you know, I noticed that traveling and mobility is so different from city to city. Mm-hmm. When I went out there, they still have all of the things that we have here. They have buses and trains and Ubers, but they're much more spread out. And it's not a simple matter of just walking from the train station to your next destination or calling an Uber. In Indianapolis, I was able to get an Uber, but when I went over to Paris, they have Ubers and you can find a car on the app, but from what I heard from one of the drivers, there's only a few drivers out there. So depending on whether they're working or not, you might get one or not get one.
I see. Okay.
Things, you even if you have the technology, you still have to be familiar with the area to really get around. That's what I kind of noticed.
Was it dark?
Right. It was, so I walked from our hotel across the street to the plant and it was very dark at night. Going home, I had to use my phone as a flashlight.
Wow.
Here it's almost too bright at night, right? There's too much light.
That is dark. So I know it's Paris, Illinois. Were there a lot of vehicles at least helping brighten the road?
Yes. During the day, of course, there's a lot of commuter traffic. At night, not so much. One thing I kind of thought about it, this was interesting, is when I needed to cross the street, I could look for cars and they'd have their headlights on. And so you can kind of tell how far away the car is. You can kind of guess. But it would be really nice if there was some way for me to know really exactly where they are, how much time I have, and how fast they're traveling. Because it's really difficult to tell speed just from looking at the headlights. So we talk a lot about putting sensors into headlights and having them measure pedestrians and giving the driver information about how far away your pedestrians are and how fast they're walking. But what if there is a way for the car to communicate information about its speed and distance to a pedestrian who's looking to cross the street? That would have been really helpful. And I thought that was a cool thing that we can maybe think about.
I'm glad you brought that up, Dan, because if there's one company you can do that, it's NAL, North American Lighting, the world's leading supplier of exterior automotive lighting. And luckily today we have NAL's president, Kurt Gadberry, as our guest, who has just messaged me and committed to solve this problem of letting pedestrians know how far oncoming vehicles are. Thank you, Kurt.
Hey, my pleasure. Dan, I fully expect by the end of this podcast, we will have solved that problem and implemented it industry-wide. So no pressure, we've got 1 hour. People solve this problem.
Awesome.
That's great.
I'm thrilled to be here. I'm honored to be part of the podcast. I'm a huge fan of the work that you two do in during your day jobs. I'm a huge fan of the podcast. Your side gig is podcast host. I really, really enjoy the podcast. I will admit, feeling a little bit of pressure. Your previous guests have set the bar very, very high. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to live up to that. I'll do my best. And I encourage, if anybody's listening to this podcast for the first time, go back and listen to some of the previous episodes. They're just terrific. Your guests are just very insightful, very wide experience in the industry. I thought one of a great episode was Jim Adler with Toyota Ventures. Very insightful, just a terrific episode to listen to. Saeed Amidi, CEO of Plug and Play, what a fantastic career he's had. I listened to that and went, I want to be that guy. It was just a great episode. And of course, the conversation with Dragos, the executive technical director for Ford Palo Alto. I mean, ultimate industry insider, lots of insights, lots of great thoughts. And of course, going way back to, I think when you first started close to a year ago now, you had our own Senior Vice President Kishore Ahuja, and I really enjoyed listening to Kishore. He's got a lot of insights as well. But yeah, all of the episodes, I've very much enjoyed and appreciate the work that you guys do and getting that information, that kind of inside industry, where's mobility going type of messages out there. So thank you for that. And I'm just honored to be here. Hope I can do my part to contribute.
Well, thank you for those kind words. We really appreciate it. And we'll continue to bring everybody in the mobility world cutting edge news. But I think the first question that we always ask, and we want to learn from you, is how did you get to where you are today?
Well, that's a great question. Next year, I will mark 30 years with North American Lighting. So I've been here quite a while. When I was considerably younger, just starting out in my career, I was living and working in St. Louis, which is my hometown. And one of the NAL execs, I had a mutual friend. And I was talking with this mutual friend and talking about my current state of employment and my interest in perhaps doing something else. And he said, I know a company that's looking for your background. Have you ever heard of Flora, Illinois? And I with apologies to my friends from Clay County, at that point in my life, I had not heard of Flora, Illinois. But a few weeks later, I was at North American Lighting and meeting with friend of a friend, and you know, things worked out, and now coming up on 30 years later, I've been with North American Lighting and just had a great career with them. Just a number of opportunities that just to be part of the automotive industry and all the excitement and challenges that brings. And so, you know, I'm just grateful for the opportunity that turned into a terrific career.
Great. Wow. 30 years. That's amazing. So you must have really seen a lot. I think vehicles and lighting in particular has changed so much over the past three decades. Wanted to ask, what are some recent developments in automotive lighting?
So recent developments, and you're right, it has changed dramatically. Going back to the 90s, I remember a phase where automotive lighting got kind of small. The lamps, the headlamps, small. If you remember back in the 90s, there was a number of cars where you couldn't even see the headlamps. They had the pop up, you know, the headlamps that would pop up and you would see them, but if they weren't on, you didn't see them. And so since that time, they've grown in size, they've grown in complexity, they've grown in function, they've grown in becoming key components of not only all the safety related aspects of the vehicle, but also the styling component. They've become highly cosmetic. They've become a source where our customers use them to just set themselves apart from the competition, kind of a very strong styling element. But if we go back to the safety aspect, there's a number of improvements that have occurred. You go back to the early 2000s when high intensity discharge came into play, and for those you may not be familiar, those are the lamps that, if you remember seeing a lamp that was coming at you with a little bit of a bluish hue to it, mm-hmm. That was high intensity discharge. And we went from that to now with the advancements in white LEDs that so many vehicles out there now have LED lighting, to advancements that, and this is, you know, this is well known, well reported, but there's advancement out there, and maybe you guys can help me out. ADB, the advancement that is approved elsewhere in the world, not quite approved in the U.S. Maybe would one of you care to explain a little bit about ADB? I'll throw it at you, Dan.
Sure, I'd be happy to. ADB stands for Adaptive Driving Beam, and it's one of the newest, I think, feature additions to modern headlights. And what it does is, everybody knows the problem of blinding headlights, right? You're driving down the road and you need to see, but the oncoming car has its high beams on and blinds you, and kind of defeats the purpose of the headlights because they're supposed to make the scene more visible, right? This is making it less visible. So what this technology does is it finds out where in the scene those other drivers are and selectively dims just those areas, so you can get the maximum illumination of your driving scene without having to blind other drivers. So it really improves safety. This is technology that can save lives. And like you mentioned, Kirk, it's available now. It's in production in other places, but not in the US yet. We're waiting for that day to come.
So Dad, if I understand you correctly, basically I can drive with my high beams on all the time.
That's right. You'd be able to drive all the time with your high beams and not worry about blinding other people.
So as a driver, I want that. Mm-hmm. So why can't I have it now?
Regulations. We are waiting for the headlights with this technology to be approved by the American regulators. Right now, the law states that you can have your high beams either on or off. You can't have them partially on and selectively dimming some areas. And from what I understand, testing is happening to try to get these approved. But it's difficult to say when that's going to be complete and have them approved for actual road use.
Wow. Well, I look forward to that. I think, as you point out, the opportunity for improved safety, you know, just for the drivers to physically see better what's coming, you know, what's down the road. Mm-hmm. It just seems like a great opportunity for safety improvement.
Absolutely.
I'd like the opportunity to ask a question as well. You talked a little bit about being at NAL for 30 years. At what point did you realize that lighting will now become sexy? So you've been 30 years. You were there when there was 15 components. You're here now when there's 200 components. And there must have been an aha moment where Kirk said, you know what? I'm in the right industry because lighting is about to become sexy and sexier, adding branding, adding autonomous driving, and always encapsulating safety. How did you go through these progressions in your career?
So I think there was not just one moment, but a couple moments as the industry changed and progressed. 20-something years ago, I was a young project manager, and I was involved in the development of the rollout of a headlamp on the Toyota Corolla back in the mid to late 90s. And the advancement on this particular lamp was that it would have a clear lens. So before that, the light distribution would be done through optical prescription on the lens. So the light would be behind the lens and it hit the lens and then it'd get diverted out to the field of vision. And so the big change there was it was going to be a clear lens. There was going to be no optical prescription in the lens itself. It was all going to be in how the reflector behind the bulb was shaped to divert the light. Wow. And so for the first time, you could look at a headlamp and you could see the inner workings of the headlamp. Before that, you'd look at a headlamp and you'd just see pillow optics or different styles of optics, and you couldn't see. And so all of a sudden it became an eye catcher. You could see the lamp. And then from there, the lamps just continued to grow and have more of a styling concept. And as vehicle designers realized the potential to add styling elements to the lamp, then the second thing we saw was these lamps that really they grew in size, but they also grew in different shapes and forms, and still completed their necessary function, but became far more cosmetic and far more of a selling feature. And I just remember maybe in the early 2000s watching car commercials and just paying attention. And I'm a industry geek, but paying attention to how much time on a 30-second spot highlighted the lighting of the vehicle. And you began to see a disproportionate amount of time focused on the lighting. And that's where I'm like, hey, I'm involved in something really cool. And my wife and kids got tired of me going, hey, look at that. That lamp's ours, you know, and having it highlighted on a commercial. Our product was getting, you know, anywhere between 30 and 50% of the TV time of that TV commercial. And I remember just being excited about that, thinking that was pretty cool. I don't know how many other people thought that was cool, but I certainly did.
Well, I guess the marketing people thought it was cool.
Yes, absolutely.
So interesting. So this styling revolution, I guess we could call it, of the headlight had happened even before LEDs, which is, yes, kind of when I had always thought that that's when it began, because the LEDs were small. They gave you the flexibility to design the headlights however you want. You mentioned they are very small in the 90s. Now they seem to be getting much bigger, right? The electric Hummer has the headlights all across the bumper or across the grill. So very interesting. I think there's a lot of disruption happening now, just in general, in the automotive industry. We hear a lot of automakers talking about investments into electrification, into autonomous driving. So it sounds like our industry's been changing, but now we're coming up to a really big inflection point. And there's going to be rapid, bigger changes coming up in the next maybe 10 years or so. So I was wondering, how do you think OEMs and companies like North American Lighting as well are positioned to handle this change?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. Our industry is going through a transformation, the likes of which I don't think, honestly, in my opinion, I don't think we've seen since Henry Ford implemented the moving assembly line. I mean, that was a huge changing point for industry. If I remember right, that goes back to 1913. So I think the transformation we're going through right now is like one of these once every 100 year type of transformations. You see, going back to Ford, you see Ford, and if you paid attention to the news, they've made major commitments to investing in R&D for electric vehicles. I think their number is something like $30 billion of committed investment in electric vehicle R&D. GM, they kind of hit the news a little bit before Ford. I think their commitment is somewhere along the lines of $35 billion, something like that. So both Ford and GM have made major commitments of a financial nature into the research and development of electric vehicles. And this is going to fundamentally change how we get from point A to point B. And I think also you see, as we talk about it in the industry, we're no longer defining ourselves as just the automotive industry. We are in the business of mobility. Mm-hmm. I think Toyota was one of the first to recognize that and make that state who they are, who and what they're about. They're not an automotive company. They're a mobility company. Even a little bit closer to home, as we reexamine who we are and what we do, we recognize that we're in the mobility business, and so we have to adapt to what that means. And so as all the OEs and all the suppliers, we're kind of grappling with that. What does that mean for us? And where is the industry going? I mentioned Toyota. Toyota they are moving down the electric vehicle path as well, but they were also, I think they're hedging their bet a little bit with hydrogen fuel cells. And perhaps there's going to be a segment of the market for hydrogen fuel cells. I think as you look across the consumer base, we all drive. I won't even say we drive. We all have different mobility needs, right? We know Dan lives in the city. That's his choice. We can question the wisdom of that choice, but that's the choice Dan made. And his mobility needs are different than mine. I'm a commuter. I drive 35 miles to work every day, so I need my vehicle to get those 35 miles. Dan, probably does. I don't even know, Dan. Do you even own a car at this point?
I do not. I get around by mostly walking, and a couple of times I've even taken the cable car to work.
Have you really? The cable car. That's taking us back to 1913, Dan.
It's going backwards. Everyone's moving backwards. Yeah.
We have both old and new mobility options. So Uber and Lyft are headquartered here. Yeah. And right in front of them, you can take an electric, what are they called? The electric cars that run up and down Market Street from the 1940s.
So, yeah. So to your needs compared to my needs, they're different. And to the farmer and the rancher, they've got different needs. And then outside of that group are there's a whole group of vehicle enthusiasts, right? These are the guys that have the supercars that drive the Corvettes. Their needs are completely different than everybody else that just described. So as we move through this transformation in the automotive industry, I don't think it's just going to be a one size fits all type of answer, for as far as what the vehicle is going to be. And, along with that, what is ownership going to look like? You know, mobility as a service, you know, am I going to, in 10 years, am I going to even own a car? Or is it going to be a subscription? And, you know, the more I pay for the subscription, the maybe, you know, the different level of vehicle I have access to that, hey, when I go to work, it'll, you know, it'll be outside my house waiting for me. I don't think that is too much of a stretch. And I think there's just all kinds of disruption that will occur as a result of this. I think back to one of your other guests, Torsten, and his, you know, what he talked about, the disruption in the travel industry. Again, shout out to that podcast. If you haven't listened to Torsten's, go back and listen to that. That was a fantastic podcast. But, you know, I think with autonomous vehicles and electric vehicles, I think that can disrupt the travel industry. I can, you know, my wife and I can get in the car and program, hey, we want to go visit this person this many hours away. The car could take us there in theory overnight. You know, we get the car with lie flat seats. We snooze and wake up in the morning and we're at our destination. I don't think that's too much of a stretch. Mm-hmm. I welcome your thoughts. What other innovation do you see, Amit, that maybe I haven't mentioned?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of innovation happening. One of the requirements that I see growing is our lighting will be used to provide housing for sensors. It not only is for LiDAR, radar, but potentially camera. I'm not going to unbundle what those mean exactly, but we have potentially a huge amount of opportunity in the future. And I know the Coda Group is working on incorporating these sensors into our real estate. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you, kind of throwing it back, is I like working at NAL. Dan likes working at NAL. Glassdoor says everyone likes working at NAL. I want to make sure that people understand that even though we're going through a phase of disruption, it's very good for us because we are expanding our business. We're allowing the consumers, our customers, and our employees to grow. And NAL has a huge amount of potential in the future. Do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. As you mentioned, where our product is on the vehicle today, on the four corners of the vehicle, we're positioned very well as that vehicle moves into advanced stages of autonomy, being able to drive itself. It's got to see 360 degrees around itself. So putting sensors in the existing lamps on the vehicle to see what's going on around the vehicle is going to be key. And we think that that's a great place for us to be. And as we've seen, you know, kind of the shift into more the vehicle becoming more of a, you know, more of a consumer electronic device as opposed to a car. I just anecdotally, if I could sidetrack for a minute, one of the things when I joined the industry, the big deal for the industry was the Detroit Auto Show. Every January, the car makers would trot out their you know, their latest, greatest. And what we've seen over the last few years, and I think you guys have seen as well, is the Detroit Auto Show has kind of been moved into second place behind the Consumer Electronics Show as cars become more sophisticated. I mean, do you see, Dan, what I'm talking about relative to that transition?
Absolutely. It's kind of it's taking its place among smartphones and computers rather than a motor vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great analogy relative to this has become a device much like a smartphone. And I think it's going to become even more integrated. And we see opportunity with our lamp to become a smart device for the vehicle in both receiving information and sending out information. As it gathers information from the environment, you could see a vehicle that you know, brings Dan to whatever function he's going to, and it announces his arrival. Hey, Dan's here. Right. Mm-hmm. It could display something on the street. It could even be, you know, vocal in nature. Hey, everybody, party started. Dan's here. Yeah. And so, you know, there's unlimited opportunities for both receiving information, sending information, communicating with a smart city. I've heard that term before. I can't say that I totally grasp what a smart city is going to look like, but communicating with the traffic signals, you know, is a potential. Amit, you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting that you said that because you said communication through a smart screen, right? And we have a set of customers right now that take our lighting and provide it to their customers. But what you just mentioned was a totally different business model, a totally different market. You're creating the screen on a vehicle, let's say for Lyft or Uber, letting Dan know his vehicle has arrived if he gets to the airport. And this is what makes lighting so exciting. It's not only putting sensors in the lighting so we can get safer driving. It's the communication for other areas in the industry, such as you mentioned earlier, this opportunity when you get to the airport, Uber says, you're here. You have communication of yard trucks. Yard trucks are moving to autonomous vehicles. You have communication of these delivery robots that are delivering pizzas already in Houston. And they need that lighting. So it's interesting that you said that, and it really solidifies and cements our position for the future.
And I think that goes to really the heart of, you know, we started and we grew, you know, in the Midwest, where, you know, automotive industry has long been rooted. But we recognize the need to have a function that you guys are performing in Silicon Valley with, along with our customers, along with all these startups that are bringing new technology to the table. And I think that speaks to the vision within the Quito group, as far as being there, working with these startups, and developing this technology that will enable, you know, just the overall improvement. You know, one of the goals, of course, is to continue to improve safety, to work, you know, continue to work our way toward that zero fatality type of mobility environment. I think we're well on the way. I think the technology is already well underway, very much working toward maturity, where I think that goal is within reach from where we sit today.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm glad that Amit and Kirk also brought up communication for the headlight. You know, we're talking about all the other additional roles that automotive lighting can play besides just illuminating our roads. It can also house sensors to sense the environment and communicate to other vehicles, other drivers, and other pedestrians, but also to each other. When machines start driving vehicles more and more, and Kirk, when you're taking your trip to Maryland, was it, and just having a nap overnight and then waking up at your destination, you don't really need your headlights to illuminate the road for you. You're not going to be looking at it. But the car does need to communicate with other self-driving vehicles, and maybe that's done through lighting. There's technology called Li-Fi that uses light and blinks it really fast, kind of like a Wi-Fi router, and communicates information that way. So going back to the smartphone analogy, automotive lighting really is becoming a platform that you can put all these different apps or features in, like communication or sensing the environment. And you can pick which ones you need at the time, just like you pick which app you need on your smartphone. And so that's what really makes automotive lighting exciting going forward, because there's all these new applications for it. And then all going back to keeping people safe. Like you say, Kirk, it all goes back to that one single purpose.
At one point in one of your previous podcasts, you talked about ACEs, and help me out on ACEs. Autonomous, connected,
right?
Electric, shared.
And so when you were talking, what you just said reminded me of when you started the podcast, your experience, and I can picture you walking, trying to cross Route 1 in the dark, and it would be very dark. But if there's a vehicle coming, you could picture at some point in the time, your smartphone's in your pocket, you're getting ready to cross the street, and you could feel your smartphone just to get your start buzzing or vibrating to get your attention that, hey, this is not safe. Mm-hmm. Right? It already knows, because the vehicle's connected, that there's a vehicle coming, you should not be on the road at this point. I mean, mm-hmm. that technology seems to be like we have it, and it should be able to be implemented in the foreseeable future. What do you think? Am I off base here?
No, not at all. I think you're totally right, and it will be implemented as 5G gets rolled out, as this infrastructure bill really gets pushed through. We're going to see a lot of it come through, at least in the U.S. Singapore and China are way ahead of us at this point, but we are committed to catch up. We're committed to make sure that infrastructure is the key to our success.
Yeah. So a function like that requires some upgrade to the infrastructure. I think a lot of the software technology is there and ready to go. But then where do you put these sensors and these communication hubs? And so I think it's really great that we've got some infrastructure investments coming forward. And I think a lot of that money is going to be dedicated to the infrastructure base that we would need to implement some of those ideas.
Let's ask Kirk now. I think he's said a lot of wonderful things right now, but let's look at more from an internal standpoint from NAL. What is NAL doing right now to future-proof itself in the face of disruption?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things we've already talked about, just having having your team in Silicon Valley to work with the OEs to be on the inside of where they're going technology-wise, to be able to work shoulder to shoulder with the different startup as it relates to new technology. So just being there and being part of that, making, you know, a number of strategic partnerships as we move into this brave new world. There's a number of things that we're going. We talked about maybe you can go back to the Brightway vision, what we're doing there. I don't know, Dan, if you want to describe that.
Yeah, very exciting technology. So this is one of the companies that Koito has invested in as part of our open innovation strategy and working with external companies on partnerships to co-develop technology. And they use this special kind of camera that flashes the environment with infrared light. So we can't see it. It's just like a camera flash, but it's in a spectrum that the human eye can't see. And then right when we expect that light to come back from a certain distance, the shutter is opened and closed to catch that light really quick. And so what that enables us to do is see through any rain or fog or other obstacles that might be between the camera and the position that we want to see. So you just get this slice in distance of objects without any disruption from fog and other particles in between. So you can do this really fast. And so if you do it sequentially at all these different distances and then overlay all those images on top of each other, you get this clean image that has effectively removed fog or mist or rain, which would be very useful in San Francisco. Sometimes you can't even see when you're driving across the Golden Gate Bridge because of all that fog rolling in. And so this is something that can go into the headlight platform. So it's yet another cool technology feature that we can add in automotive lighting.
Yeah, that's awesome. And to your point of the, you know, as far as the limitations of a driver and just the standard headlamp, you know, we all know we've all driven in fog and what that risk that presents. I believe it was it last year in Texas where we had just massive pileup due to weather conditions. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's just, again, tremendous opportunities for safety improvement. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited about what the partnership with Brightway Vision will lead to. Just a lot of great opportunities. And then, you know, and back to your question, Amit, we're looking at other opportunities outside of just, you know, traditional OEM type of product offerings. So there's other things that we can be working with. We have a good friend that we work closely with at Toyota. Like shout out Matt Stitch. We'll have to link him and make sure he listens. But Matt went from Toyota in Detroit out to California to work with Toyota's investment with Joby. And I believe Joby's an acronym, although I can't remember. do you know off the top of your head? No pressure.
I know it's a VTOL, so vertical takeoff and landing.
And so Toyota is looking at that. So we have opportunities to partner with customers like Toyota and what they're doing as far as lighting on the VTOL. And one of your other podcasts, and I don't remember who said this, but he talked about where are we going on mobility? Well, in cities like San Francisco and Detroit, traffic is terrible. Chicago, New York, it's too expensive to add roadways. It's too expensive to go down and add tunnels. So the only other direction to go is up. And I thought that was a very insightful comment. And so you see companies like Toyota making investments in that. So we're looking at that. You mentioned yard trucks, that move freight within a given yard, investments there, just opportunities to partner there with yard trucks, buses, basically anything that that can move you from point A to point B that we see an opportunity to partner with and help build that the future of whatever form of mobility that is.
And doesn't this, I mean, both Dan and Kirk, doesn't this kind of blow your mind that Toyota's investing in this helicopter ship that will take you to take five people from one place to another? I mean, isn't this crazy?
It is crazy.
In a good way, of course.
Yeah. In a good way. And ever since, I was a kid, the idea of a flying car has always been out there. It's always been, it's the Jetsons, right? For those of you that are old enough to remember the Jetsons.
Yeah.
But it feels like we're on the brink of perhaps becoming the Jetsons, for lack of a better term. Dan, I don't know. What do you think?
It seems like all the ideas that are in the Jetsons, and I remember that show very well, are at least being researched and worked on. And flying cars is a great example. We already have companies that are actually researching it. And even some tests. I was just watching a video this morning with a pretty cool, just looks like this big drone. I forgot the name of the company, but 8 propellers flying around. And right, when you see airplanes flying around, they've got that red light and the white light on one side or the other. Like, there's a lot of need for lighting in the flying industry. I don't know what it's called, the flying industry. As well, do you see a future, Kirk, with NAL in this whole aviation industry?
Well, absolutely. And we see that to a degree, with our as you mentioned, our parent company is Quito, and they have partnerships in aeronautical now. So it would be a natural for us, as this continues to develop here in the U.S., it would be a natural for us to follow their lead and head into that that segment of mobility. But absolutely, there's a need. And with aeronautical today, as you can imagine, the safety and quality requirements are even more stringent than perhaps for automotive. But yeah, certainly there are opportunities, which brings back to your point of how do we make sure that NAL continues to remain vibrant in this ever-changing environment? I think those are just a few of the things. A few of the opportunities that will help us to continue to be successful. And I think, as you guys know, with Quito, our parent company has been around for well over 100 years now, and I think they're positioned to be around for another 100 years.
I agree. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the progression of not going from safety to branding to autonomous driving, but the progression from going from mechanical components to electrical components, and now we're looking at software components. How do you see that progression taking place at NAL?
Yeah, so again, as we look into the future, we've seen different aspects of our product become more of a commodity. I wouldn't say that our product today is a commodity, because there's still so many aspects of design and manufacturing that our product is not a simple product to make. There's the quality requirements are very strict. And so going forward, though, as LEDs become lower in cost, as printed circuit board assemblies become lower in cost, you could see where there's a potential for these types of components to become more of a commodity than perhaps they are today. So with that, we have to take a serious look at, okay, what about the software that runs this lamp? So I argued for a long time that, we were a company that injection molded lamps and put halogen bulbs in there, and we sold them to the customers. And then we moved to this LED light source. And now we see the majority of our lamps not being halogen, but LED light sourced. But more and more of what our lamp is doing, we could arguably distinguish ourselves through how we develop the software that runs LAMP and how are the software that what's running LAMP integrates with the vehicle. And so there really is an opportunity, I think, down the road for us to really emphasize what we can do for the customers, not hardware wise, but perhaps software wise. That seems like a tremendous opportunity. And perhaps from where you sit in Silicon Valley, what do you see? Does that seem like the direction we're going?
Yeah, totally. I think we, as you said before, we saw an opportunity to go from mechanical to electric. Cool, because we had an opportunity to provide more signals to the LAMP. And now we have a lot of opportunity to provide brains, very small brains in the LAMP, but we call it kind of like the medulla, quick reptilian brain. As we drive, we want to make sure that we can make very quick decisions, and then we supply all the relevant information back to the real brain who makes the long-term thinking. And that's where NAL will sit in the future.
I agree. That's a very apt way to describe where I think our product is heading.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point, Amit. I think that we talked a little bit about the headlights being the great place to have the sensors, but then what to do with that data that's from the sensors. And we don't really have time to send that to a central computer and then send that to a cloud somewhere where there's some supercomputer or server waiting. It's got to be done in the headlight, doesn't it? So I think there's huge opportunities for perception being done in the headlight and also data collection. I think there's a great opportunity there to see what's going on and kind of aggregate traffic data or safety data. And I think governments and smart cities want that. Of course, there's privacy concerns, I think, and we've talked about that on previous podcasts. But maybe NAL could be in the business of data, big data analysis or something like that. What do you think, Kirk?
Yeah, I think, you know, relative to privacy concerns, you know, data, collection and I don't know what the, help me out with the phrase as far as making the data anonymous. Mm-hmm. So we're not collecting data on exactly where Amit is driving and how fast he's driving and right. whether Amit turns his turn signal on or not, because we all know Amit is a safe driver. He would never turn without not turning his turn signal on.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's an opportunity where we can collect that data and help with how a smart city would function. I think there's a tremendous amount of money earmarked in this upcoming infrastructure bill for improvements in roadways and bridges. And, you know, there's an opportunity there as well to help make that investment as effective as possible. I think there's something like $110 billion. Does that sound right to what?
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't even comprehend that. But across the country, you know, as I drive, you know, I do routinely drive between here in Alabama and here in Michigan. I will say that the number of roadways that need improvement, the number of bridges that, you know, very clearly are aged and need it's hard for me to argue against the need for that kind of improvement in the infrastructure of our country.
Yeah.
Sense. So do you see, I know our parent company Koito has infrastructure lighting in Japan. We have 30% market share. Do you see that NAL seeing an opportunity for disruption that's taking place within the smart city realm, eventually looking at supplying those type of products?
I would think so. In that our parent company is doing it now, and they have the technology now, it'd be very easy for us to approach, you know, be it the city of San Francisco or the state of California, say, hey, here is technology that is mature and developed and then ready for implementation, ready for deployment that can help you manage. Because I in California, I lived briefly in the Bay Area. I remember what traffic was like when I lived there umpteen years ago. I can only imagine what it's like today. So if we got a product that's off the shelf that, hey, we can help you manage and so that improve the traffic flow, I would think that would be something that we could capitalize as a subsidiary of Koito. Absolutely.
I have this feeling that after listening to you through this podcast, I have a feeling that you really know what you're doing, because I feel like you understand where we're headed in terms of electrification. You understand where we're headed in terms of fuel cells, that it's not a one size fits all situation. You understand that the real estate we have today cannot go away for a very, very long time. So the employees of NAL have a secure future because it's going to be required for communication when we drive at night, even for the sensors that we're incorporating into the real estate. You also understand the interchangeability between the sensors that we're working on today and how we can apply them to infrastructure to provide advanced information. And you also understand the other areas that we could potentially provide lighting to, such as VTOLs, as Joby, the helicopter that flies around, the yard trucks, the delivery robots. So after this podcast, I feel kind of very secure being here. And I appreciate this talk that you've given us for the past hour.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. And if, you know, any understanding that I have is a representation of the capability of our management team. I feel fortunate on a daily basis to work with, as you know, some very talented, very capable individuals on our management team that helps keep me going the right direction, helps keep NAL going the right direction. I'm very confident in the team that we have now and charting out an appropriate course for NAL's continued success. I just feel good about where we're at and where we're going.
Wonderful. And Kirk, I'd like to know, do you have any advice for people who have listened to this podcast and got really excited about automotive lighting and want to grow their careers in the business, or maybe even expand to some of the sensors or the software activities that NAL is going to be getting more and more involved in going forward?
Yeah, I think a couple thoughts. Anybody that, I'm going to just a shameless plug here. Anybody that's currently considering making a move or getting ready to come out of school, go to www.nal.com. We have a number of open positions. We'd love to talk to you about career opportunities. And I think that's exactly what we have to offer is a career. And I think I'm evidence of that. You know, I started here back in 92 and I'm coming up, as we said before, 30 years. There are terrific career opportunities to be had with NAL. I think back as I was in graduate school, a Ford executive came and spoke to our class. And I remember when he, in speaking, the one thing that stuck out to me, he said, a career in the automotive industry is not for the faint of heart. And I remember sitting there going, what does he mean by that? It's not for the faint of heart. And so now, from where I sit now, I can say, yeah, a career in the automotive industry is full of a number of challenges. The customer expectation, be it the OEMs or the consumer, very, very demanding. Not a lot of room for error. And our customers want a certain quality level, and they want it today, not tomorrow, right? So there's a continual pressure. But on the opposite side of that is the fact that a career in the automotive industry can be very rewarding at a personal level. You know, the product that we provide literally can save lives. You know, there's a safety component that we take very, very seriously, can literally save lives. And so to be, and then also, you know, as we talked about too, to be such a key part of the vehicle styling, you know, those of us who appreciate vehicle styling, you know, that our product has an impact on the styling of the vehicle, I think that's pretty cool. So there's a number of ways that the career in the automotive industry can be rewarding yet challenging. But if you feel like, you know, you're up for that, I think this is a terrific place to spend part of your career.
Thank you very much for that advice. Really, Dan and I really appreciate you taking the time to be on our podcast today. And for those of you who have the opportunity to listen to this, all I think about is Pro NAL. Yeah. We're headed the right way. We have the right direction, right management team, and the right customers to back us into the future of mobility. And this is our inflection point. This 10 years will be our inflection point, and we're prepared for it. So thank you very much, Kirk, for joining us today.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me.
This has been really great. And Kirk, I have one more question.
Yeah, so please.
I really enjoy baseball, and I know you're a fellow baseball fan. Do the Cardinals have a shot at the playoffs this year still?
Dan, I am an optimist, but even that stretches my optimism.
Okay.
I don't see it happening. Although, if you did watch last night's game, Adam Wainwright, 39 years old, threw an 88 pitch shutout gem. 39 years old, 88 pitches, complete game shutout. It was a work of beauty. So even though the season in and of itself is disappointing, things like the game last night, very enjoyable.
There's still gems to be seen. Right?
Absolutely.
Great, great.
Well, thank you very much. And join us next time where we're going to host John Bean, founder of MEM Computing, a quantum computing company working on mobility. Thank you.